This lesson this morning on the IAMs, particularly enjoyed in the studies on it because it should have a personal application to each one of us in that we should fully know who God is, who Christ is, and just who we are. Because sometimes, when you look at this day, we may try to place ourselves in the place of God on certain things. We need to realize we cannot do that. The text is found in Revelation chapter 2. Jesus, in writing to the church at Thyatira, exposes the wickedness of Jezebel and her sinful teaching. He pronounced condemnation upon those who condone and participate in her spiritual fornication. Revelation 2 and verse 23, I will kill her children with death, and all the churches shall know that I am he who searches the minds and hearts and will give to each of you according to your works. When Christ speaks of searching the heart, we all know or should know that he is dealing with our intellect, our mind. We're told in Proverbs 23 and verse 7, one thinks with his heart, he understands, he reasons with the heart, he believes with the heart. The importance that our mind, our heart, our intellect play in our life determines who we are in this life. Proverbs 23 and verse 7, for as he thinks in his heart, so is he. The right of this would be meaning what? What knowing my mind determines to do, that I'm going to do, whether good or bad. And so it reflects on how we live that people can see that in our mind of what we do from the things that we do. Matthew 13 and verse 15, for the heart of the people has grown dull. And looking at this, Vine says dull means heavily or of difficulty of hearing. We know this was always the case with the scribes, the Pharisees, the Sadducees, that they would not tolerate the teachings of Christ. Their hearing had become dull. They wouldn't accept the teachings of what he was teaching. And so their hearts became dull or heavy of hearing what he said. And they would simply ignore what he taught, as many in that day and time did. Mark 2 and verse 8. Why do you reason about these things in your heart? When you turn to that text, the question is that Christ, as he enters into Capernaum and he heals this person who had been paralyzed, and he pronounces upon him, thy sins be forgiven. Those people there make a statement concerning him. He says, why do you reason these things in your heart? And Vine says here, reason means to deliberate. And what they were deliberating is a statement that Jesus made in verse 5 when he said, when Jesus saw their faith, he said to the son, to the paralytic, sons, your sins are forgiven. This was a question or the statement that they were deliberating on. Because they say, who has the power to forgive sins? And so that's what they were reasoning or deliberating in their mind. In Romans 10, verse 10, we're told, for with the heart one believes unto righteousness. When Jesus said, blessed are the pure in heart, he had in mind the mind, a mind clear in understanding, unmixed with anything else. And that's something that you think is difficult to do? That you go through this world, that every thought and each moment that you live in this world is focused upon the spiritual things?
Is it hard to do? Yes, I think.
I'm not saying this is hard to do. I said, do we do it? I was talking with Ray, the big Ray, the other night. We were talking about, we spend probably from 10 to 12 in worship or either Bible study singing. Does ever a worldly thought during that time enter your mind? Or can you say I was 100% focused these so many minutes and so many seconds upon the spiritual things? A lot of people I talk to say, no, it's just something thought, something at home, or something will pop in. And not really, you don't have to think about it. It just enters your mind. And so it's hard when we say that we are focused, and we should be focused, and we should strive to do that. I'm not saying we should. I'm saying, do we? That is, each time as Donnie blessed, or we focus upon each word that he says, or maybe at times our mind wanders to something else, what I'm going to do when I leave here, or so on. It's something difficult to do, but that's what we should strive to do. Blessed are the pure in heart, a mind clear and understanding, unmixed with anything else. And the difficulty is that each Monday morning after the Lord's Day, we enter back into the world, where probably 97% of the people we encounter are going to have different thoughts, a different lifestyle. The words that they speak, the thoughts that they think, we're there with them. And so are we continuing at that time to be focused upon the spiritual aspects? Or do we see something and look that we shouldn't have looked at? And Mark Todd, I think that's where God's grace and mercy comes in. That we stumble from time to time, we see things, we say things, we think things that we shouldn't. But John says in Revelations, I am he who searches the minds and hearts. Saying that Larry cannot determine the actions I do or know my thoughts, neither can I know his. He may see something from me, but he may not know the motivation of why I've done something. Well, he don't know the motivation. I don't know what each one's motivation is here of why you do something. Just because I do something does not mean I was thinking of doing it. But Christ is the true searcher of our hearts and our minds. David prayed in Psalm 51, verse 10, create in me a clean heart, O God. He was praying for a clean mind, a pure mind. And again, this should be what we strive for. But we're going to encounter the difficulties each day in our lives in trying to obtain that. A mind, pure mind, not mixed between God and the things of the world. That's a very difficult thing to do. In Ezra 7, verse 10, it says there that Ezra prepared his heart to the rebuilding and for the work that was set before him. And so, it's the personal applications that we need to make when it says, I am he who searches the heart. And that means it's not me or you. And sometimes we do that. Well, I know why he done it. You don't know why one person done it. If you do, you place yourself in the place of God. And you cannot do that. Christ knows the condition of the heart. In John chapter 1, verse 48, someone turn and read.
Thou knowest thou me, Yeshua answered and said unto him, before that
Philip called thee, when thou wast under the fig tree, I saw thee. Christ, you made an application to Nathanael. He said, Nathanael asked Christ, how do you know me? And again, know how. Well, when you look back up to verse 47, Jesus saw Nathanael come and said to him, behold, an Israelite in whom is no deceit. What did he know about Nathanael? There was no deceit. Not that he knew, well, he did know everything, but this is what he's having reference to, that he knew his heart, because Christ is a searcher of the heart. They could see Nathanael was void of deceit and hypocrisy. And again, when we look at our lives, what does God see? And the Lord determined this when he saw him under the fig tree. The power that he had. And again, could this statement be made of us today? Albert Barnes stated on this verse in his commentary, how happy it would be if he, who knows the hearts of all of us as he did Nathanael, could bear the same testimony about us. The question is, can he? In chapter 2 of John, while Christ was at the Passover in Jerusalem, we are told that many believed on him because of the signs which he did in verse 23. Now, when he was in Jerusalem at the Passover during the feast, many believed in his name when they saw the signs which he did. In verse 24, though, we're told what?
He did not commit himself because he knew all men.
Right. Mine says he did not commit himself. And what the application he is making here, I do not know. Why he didn't, we're not told that. But he didn't need the testimony of other people concerning him. I don't need to tell God what I think of Mark or Laurel or Greg. I don't need to do that. Because my assessment is not going to be accurate. God knows that, so I don't need to tell him that. And we need to keep that in mind. The old saying, if I can take care of myself, it's a full-time job. I don't need to look at anyone else. He says, because he knew all man, he needed no testimony from others. For he knew what was in man, verse 25, and had no need that anyone should testify of man, for he knew. This ideal, the idea of the thoughts, the motives for why we do stuff, what motivated us to make a statement, what motivated us to look at a certain thing, a lot of times it's because we do not rid ourselves of the flesh. And the flesh is a hard thing to overcome because that's what we live in. It's the world that we live in. And we're surrounded with filth that we see, and you can sometimes your eyes cannot avoid what you see or what you hear, because it becomes so subtly. And most of all who work, if you work in a workplace where there's no cursing or the dress is no problem, that people conduct themselves in a manner, usually that's not the case. At work, the people you talk to on the phone, especially those up in Michigan stuff, a cuss word to a woman is no more than a man. And they'll blunt it out just right before you. And you even talk about something else, the language and stuff that they use. And so it's something that we hear each day. And it's going to be that way until our time here is no more. And sometimes we get caught up in this. And our thoughts may be what they shouldn't have been. Jesus did not need the testimony from man to tell him the character of man. Luke chapter 18. We're all familiar with this. It's an application that we can make. The parable on the tax collector, that he spoke a parable in verse 9, who trusted in themselves that they were righteous. And prayerfully, this does not apply to us. I think I'm better than anyone else. You think you're better than me. That we can all recognize that we are sinners. We should have not received forgiveness or mercy from God, but he did. So we cannot think of ourselves like that. The two men went up to the temple to pray, one a Pharisee and the other a tax collector. He makes a comparison here, the Pharisee does, with the other individual, the tax collector. Stood up and prayed with himself, God, I thank you that I'm not like other men. Well, in a way, that may be appropriate. I think that I'm not like the world. But in this process of time, extortioners, unjust, even as this tax collector, I need not forget that I have too am a sinner. That I'm not righteous because I may be a Christian. 1 John tells us that. Many say he has not sinned, he's a liar. And so it's something we need to focus on. I fast twice a week, gives tithes of all that I possess. The best you can do in life would still not be enough for what God done for you. But this Pharisee tries to justify himself. And the tax collector, standing afar off, would not as much so raise his eyes to heaven, beat his breast, saying, God be merciful to me, a sinner. Should be our prayer each day that God be merciful to us. And not compare myself to someone else, but how God sees me in my mind, in my thoughts. Christ knew the condition of both. The Pharisee did not tell him. Christ knew. Why? John 1 verse 3, all things were made through him, Christ, and without him was nothing. And without him, nothing was made that was made. Christ made us. He knows our thoughts. He knows everything about us. We don't need to tell him about someone else. He knows us because he created us. And so we know all these things. Again, why did he not commit himself to them? We're not told. What he saw in their hearts, we're not told. But whatever it was, the statement is made that he would not commit himself to them. And whatever he saw, it kept him from trusting them. And so what about our hearts? That when the Creator of all looks down upon our mind, our intellect, what does he see? In Luke chapter 6, Jesus entered the synagogue on the Sabbath. And a man was there with a withered hand. We're told there that the scribes and Pharisees watched him closely to whether he would heal on the Sabbath. In verse 7, that they may find an accusation against him. Again, their intentions, or their thoughts, or their thought process, or their motivation. They were looking for something to motivate them to say that what he was doing was wrong. So this is what they were looking at. They watched him closely. Verse 8, concerning Christ, Luke says, he knew their thoughts. And said to the man who had the withered hand, arise and stand here. And he arose and stood. And then he asked the scribes and Pharisees, I'll ask you one thing. Is it lawful on the Sabbath to do good or to do evil, to save life or to destroy? Verse 10, and when he looked around at them all, he said to the man, stretch out your hand. And he did so, and the hand was restored as whole as the others. But they were filled with rage. And we're told there that they discussed with one another what they might do to Jesus. Some versions might say in place of this word discussed that they communed with one another, meaning they talked over what he'd done. And he said again in Matthew chapter 12, in verse 25, concerning the Pharisees there. And it says that Jesus knew their thoughts and said to them, every kingdom divided against itself is brought to desolation. Every city or house divided against itself will not stand. And again, the accusation they were making that he cast out demons by Beelzebub. And Jesus knew their thoughts. If you try to look at a thought process of a Pharisee, of why they would not admit that Jesus was who he was, what comes to mind? That this feeling seemed to grow each day as Jesus was around them, each day that Jesus talked with them, even though we're not told all during his lifetime there. But again, not except because they did not think he was God's son and who he claimed to be. They were relating to some other, as we know about, some other king. And so they failed to recognize that. But it talks about knew their thoughts. Divine states knew means to see, perceive, or to have knowledge of. They simply did not have knowledge. They had knowledge, but they would not accept that knowledge as others did of who Christ was. The thought, when you look at it, right, the question, can we know people today? In one way, okay? 1 Thessalonians 4. Verses 4 and 5, if someone will... 1 Thessalonians 1, 4 and 5.
1 Thessalonians 1 or 4?
1 Thessalonians.
1 or 4?
Yes, chapter 1, verses 4 and 5.
Knowing, brethren, beloved, your election of God, for our gospel came not unto you in word only, but also in power, and in the Holy Ghost, and in much assurance, as you know what manner of men we were among you for your sake.
Paul here says right here that you, as you know what kind of men we were among you. Chapter 2 and verse 1, for you yourselves know, brethren, that our coming to you was not in vain. 2 Thessalonians 3 and verse 7, Paul says, for you yourselves know how you ought to follow us, for we were not disorderly among you. And when you look up Vine's definition of the words know in these three or four verses, Vine says it's through observation that they knew who Paul was. Okay? And again, the importance of our life, that our life, what people see, may be the only thing that may convince them or help them in being like we are. And so this thought process, our mind, should reflect in what we do. But that's one way. Vine says that's the only way. It's through observation. And that word does not mean that I know your mind or you know mine. Okay? Any thoughts? Christ knows the motivation of the heart. Jesus looks deeper than just the thoughts of the heart. He has the ability to determine its motivation. What motivates us to think like we think. And it should be because of God's great mercy and the grace that Mark dealt with. But what motivates us when we do that which is wrong? To think like we think.
Usually trying to please ourselves.
And so, because you want to do that, that's what motivates you to...
See a lot of the world that does that. I mean, not only in the world is non-religious, but even in the world is religious. Something else motivates them, something they want.
Especially too, if you will look at denominationalism and all that they offer, the pleasures of this earth, and it's classified as worship to God. But things you do, the decisions you make, there's motivation behind it. You don't just don't come up to, I did that without thinking. Well, no, you've done it because you thought. You just don't, your mind don't function like that. All of a sudden it's just absent from you and you're doing stuff you don't know. I understand these situations of illnesses and so on. That, I mean, we understand that. But you do stuff not because, I didn't know what was I thinking. Well, you was thinking of doing wrong. Or you were thinking of obeying the gospel. You're doing one of the two. Like I said, that mind is not absent that God placed in your mentality. In that we forget these things. Christ, again, knows the motivation of the heart. And Jesus looks deeper than just the heart, but why we do stuff. After the feeding of the multitude followed Jesus to Capernaum. And he said to them, you seek me not because you saw signs, but because you ate of the loaves and were filled. In John chapter 6, if you'll turn there, in verse 26. In the feeding of the 5,000. He says that you follow me not because you saw the signs. What did he determine was our motivation for following him? Because he fed them.
The belly.
Yeah, the belly. That was the motivation that caused them to follow him. It's not because the belief of the signs. It should be what motivates you to be here this morning. And is my worship going to be acceptable to God this morning because I'm here, because something motivated me to be here? Not saying may not have lapses from time to time. But why are you here? Maybe it's a lot of people, I know a lot of people, and they made a statement, well, if I don't come, they'll call me. Well, wrong motivation. Okay? So we need to understand what motivates us to be here. And it's prayerfully to give thanks for all that God has done for us. And so we recognize what a great God that we serve. He says, you seek me not because you saw signs, and because you ate of the loaves and were filled. Again, if you were there at that time, I wrote down, if you were able to have seen this, what would have been your thoughts or my thoughts of why they were following him? You didn't know their thoughts, but you observed them, and they were following him. What would have been your thoughts? When I look at each one of you, you look at me this morning, what are my thoughts of why you are here? Well, I assume you love God. But that may not be the reason you're here. The searcher of hearts is going to determine that in judgment. It's something we need to be aware of. So we would have probably determined, I would have, that they were following Christ for who he was. Again, the searcher of hearts knows why we're here, what motivates us. He's the only one that can give an accurate assessment of us. And he will do that in judgment. The crowd following Jesus was for a materialistic reason. Christ knew that because he made that statement. He knew their thoughts for the physical food. And the searcher of the hearts can give that accurate statement and why we are here. Christ knows the reasoning of the heart. When Jesus entered Capernaum, he healed a man of palsy. He said to the man, "Son, thy sins are forgiven." And certain of the scribes reasoned in their heart that Jesus blasphemed. Jesus knew this. That nothing was hid. It should be a sobering thought that not for the minute time that anything escapes the mind of God. A thought may retain 1 second. God knows the motivation for that 1 second of why you thought that. It's something that should motivate us each day to spend time in prayer to God, to look at God's Word, let us be filled with the fruits of the Spirit, instead of the thoughts of the flesh. And even the Apostle Paul struggled with this, the weakness of the flesh. Paul knew it. And again, it's a constant battle. And separate and apart from God, we'll never win that battle. I don't care how much you try. If we cannot rid ourselves, and I'm not saying completely, but at least bring those things under control, that they do not cause us to continually, each day, to do those things. Mark 2 and verse 6, some of the scribes were sitting there and reasoning in their hearts. Vines here says the word reason means to dispute. And they were disputing things in their heart. They were disputing Jesus' claim to forgive sins. They were having an argument. Can you or can't you? Mark 2 and verse 8, immediately, not sometime later, but immediately Jesus perceived in his spirit that they reasoned within themselves. He said, "Why do you reason these things? Or why are you disputing these things in your heart?" Christ was never deceived. He never believed a lie. Was never wrong in his assessment of others. He was the true mind reader. All these attributes of God Christ had, we don't have. And we need to understand that. That I cannot make an assessment of Marilyn or anyone else. I'll not put my place in the place of God, stand before him in judgment. And you shouldn't, if you will, neither. Revelation 2 and verse 18, and writing to the church at Thyatira, says there, "The Son of God, who has eyes like a flame of fire and feet like fine brass." Verse 19, "I know your works." It says his eyes were as a flaming fire, penetrating the very thoughts and intents of each of us heart, our hearts. What was the key to this power? John 8, verse 23 says, "You are from beneath, I am from above." That means we've got limitations. You're of this world, I am not of this world. Only God can search the hearts of man. Jeremiah 17, verse 10, "I am the Lord who searches the hearts. He understands all the imaginations of the heart." 1 Chronicles 28, verse 9, "For the Lord searches all hearts and understands all the intents of the thoughts. Some versions may render in place of intense imaginations of the heart. Strong states of this word to mean to purpose. What you purpose in your heart. It sounds much like in 2 Corinthians, Paul, what you purpose in your heart to give. This purpose can carry more than just the good to it. It can carry that which is evil, that we purpose in our heart to do evil. Psalms 44 and verse 21, would not God search this out, for he knows the secrets of the heart. Psalms 139 verse 2, you know my sitting down daily and my rising up, you understand my thought afar off. Hebrews 4 and verse 13, all things are naked and open before the eyes of him with whom we have to do. As God in the flesh, John 1 verse 14, the Word became flesh and dwelt among us. He had the power to search the heart. And again, this cannot be attributed to ordinary man. 1 Corinthians 2 and verse 11, for what man knoweth, the things of man, save the spirit of man which is in him. That's all we know. Okay? Nothing else. And the only way that I can know Mark's thoughts is if he tells me. And still, that might not be what he's thinking, but what he's telling me. So we need to understand this, okay?
Works we can know.
Huh?
Works we can know.
Paul made reference to that. Did he not? I know, if I say I know the motives of your actions, then I take upon myself the right and privilege that belongs to God, and for which I am not qualified. Should I assume the position of reading minds, then I'm thinking of myself more highly than I ought to think of myself. Not so with God or the Lord. For he knew what was in man. Any thoughts?
Well,